नामश्रेष्ठं मनोमापि सच्चिपुत्रं मत्रास्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरूपरिं मथुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरं महु राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीतग्रीपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वञ्चाकल्पतरूभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं भवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालयदिति निराजितापदपङ्कजन्त आजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितष्टं हरिणं संश्रयामि नारेपितचरिं चिरात्करुणयावतीर्णा खलु समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं सुभक्तिश्रियम् हरिपुरता सुन्दरद्युतिकदं वसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः आजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदतो सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलाय तक्षं विश्वाम्भरो द्विजाभरो जुगधर्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लालिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिव्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धुदीनाबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशगोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणमृतवाहिने कृपया निजपादब्ज दर्शन मह्यं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तशाखमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम् श्री सचिनन्दन गौर हरि की जय श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय साधु संघ की जय श्री शिक्षास्तकं की जय गौर प्रमानंद हरि हरि बोल Welcome to all. Dandabat, thanks so much for coming. And we are in our last meeting. So after having gone through a few gatherings of studying the third verse of Shikshastagam, we finally arrived to the last line, Kirtaniya Sadahari. But since this last line can only be understood by going through the first three lines, we'll go first very briefly with a brief recap of what we saw in the previous meetings. Not only a brief recap of yesterday's class, but of all the classes, briefly, I promise. So we can fully understand the context and the necessity of this last line, Kirtaniya Sadahari.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Bhadra, welcome. So to begin, we can invoke first of all the verse itself, the golden rule of the Golden Lord, and recite it all together. Trinadapi sinichina tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Ramachandra, please, you can read our poetic rendition of it.
Be as humble as the quiet grass, as enduring as the ancient tree. Seek not the praise of men, but honor every soul you see. Would this heart sing the name of Hari endlessly.
Jai Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. So in a minute we will go to this last line. Sing the name of Hari endlessly. Kirtaniya Sadahari. But to make full sense of that last line, a brief recap, a brief journey through the first three lines we have explored. the previous meetings. We also have one introductory meeting, our first meeting, where we explore a little bit the historical context of this verse and the Shikshastakam at large, how the Shikshastakam appears, where it appears, with Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, then in Chaitanya Charitamrita put in order, then explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as representing the different stages of bhakti. And then especially highlighted this third verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita appearing three times quoted more than any other verse and taking us to the conclusion this is in one sense the most important thing that the most important Lord ever said to us, the golden rule of the golden Lord. And on that first class, we also mentioned how this verse is kind of what is akin to the yamas and niyamas in the yoga system, right? In the yoga system, before you sit and start to practice, first you have to conduct yourself outside of the sitting in a certain way. So in the same way, this verse is giving us the proper decorum or behavior to chant, to engage in the singing of the name in a proper way. Because if we sing to do kirtan, but we are not conducting ourselves in this sunichi na sahishnu nama nani amani nama nadina, proportionately to how much we are missing these three lines, we'll be missing the fourth line, which is all about kirtan, right? What else? We also mentioned in that first meeting how these qualities of humility, tolerance, compassion, forgiveness, and so on, respect, speaks a lot about our relationships, how we are relating to everyone. It's not only about how do I behave when I'm chanting the name, because it's relatively simple to be in my room privately and I will chant my job, but now I will be very tolerant now. Mm-hmm. And if I'm sitting in a cozy asana, I have my incense there, I will tolerate. I will be very tolerant, more humble than a blade of, but nobody's challenging me. So in big part, at least, this verse applies to our relationships with others, which somehow reflect our relationship with Krishna. Remember, we quoted these verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam by Kapila Dev, saying, if you worship the deity, but you mistreat others, your worship basically equals zero. So one thing has to reflect the other. So therefore, we conclude that these four pillars, Sunichi, Nasahishnu, Nama, Ninama, Nadina, somehow can be described as another set of four regulative principles for us, four very important pillars on which to construct our project, our temple project in our hearts, basically. And all of them, as we mentioned, represent nishta, no? Constancy, steadiness, fixity, presence, attention in bhakti. Then, second meeting, we started with the first line of the verse. After the first introductory meeting, second meeting was Trinadapi Sunichena. Be as humble as the quiet grass. And we decided to describe each quality and for what that quality is not. Remember, we resorted to this process of via negativa. How does healthy humility does not look like? So we brainstormed a little bit on that. A lot, I should say. Trying to first deconstruct distorted understandings that we may still have about what's sunichi and what's humility. And then the ground is clearer to define what real humility looks like. Like the verse itself says, trinat, like the grass. How the grass is humble, it's bending without breaking. So your bending should be in a way that you don't end up being a broken person. It has to be a skillful bending without breaking. Another way that we define humility, quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he will say humility is perfect submission to the truth. And no sympathy for untruth. So in that sense, humility will take different shapes. Whatever truth appears, however truth manifests in my life, I will submit to that. And when truth is not appearing in my life, even if it comes dressed as truth, but it's untruth, I won't submit to that. And that will be my humility, basically. We also draw a few parallels between the word humility and humus. Remember, humus being soil, round, fertile soil, being grounded. And we also try to redeem, so to say, some expressions that maybe for some years were not properly understood in the Gaudiya Vaishnav circles, like being lower than the worm in the stool, right? We try that our best to show how actually that has a positive connotation, but we need to understand those in proper context as well, right? And we concluded about how the humility that Mahaprabhu is seeing in this stage of Nishtha makes him see everything as guru. When you are deeply humble, everyone becomes your guru, basically. The grass, the tree, the whole environment. Because, again, this bird represents Nishtha. So it's a type of humility in which you are very present, very attentive. Nishtha means the mind is not so scattered. There's not so much instability like in previous stages. So you can really listen to the messages in nature, to the messages coming from every direction. And you can find guru everywhere. That's why Mahaprabhu is teaching us. In principle, guru is everywhere. A localized guru, the function of a localized guru is to train our vision, so we find guru everywhere. Localized guru is not saying, forever you can only learn from me, nobody has anything to teach you. In the beginning, the guru may say, only listen to me, but in a way that gradually I end up learning, receiving a whole gospel and sermon from the grass and from trees and from nature. You're surrounded by multiple paramparas here. Right, and we concluded talking also about unconditional love. As every quality we started describing for what is not, the conclusion of every quality in this series was how to be humble considering that Krishna loves us unconditionally. How humbling that is. Without doing anything to deserve it, you're already fully accepted and loved by God. That's so humbling if we really play out the implications of that. Then, third meeting, we went to the second line, Tarora Pisa Krishnuna, be as enduring or tolerant as the tree, as the ancient tree. So again, we reflected first of what's unhealthy tolerance, how real tolerance does not look like. And then we reflected of what healthy tolerance entails. And the example that Mahaprabhu is giving of the tree, who is not only tolerating, receiving, accepting, without complaining, without counteracting, but giving while tolerating. Tree is giving air, fruit, shadow, even wood to the one, shadow to the one who is cutting it, and so on and so forth. And of course, immediately we said, okay, but how to embody that level of tolerance in our level, in a way that we are not collapsing. So we again resorted to the example of the tree, and we say how a tree, as much as it grows upward, it grows downward even more. So it can only go upward as much as it's properly rooted. So in the same way, we can only exhibit some level of tolerance as much as we are rooted in certain realization. So there has to be a corresponding form of tolerance to our realization. If I try to be more tolerant than how rooted I am, I will become uprooted. It will be too much weight for me. I will collapse. And then we concluded also thinking of reflecting on how tolerance can be also the tolerance that Mahaprabhu was mentioning here, the tolerance of the tree, can be really described also in words like forgiveness, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say pure compassion free from envy. How the forgiving is a way of giving to others, giving fully, we explained the word. And we concluded again, going back to unconditional love. Krishna loves me unconditionally, which means he tolerates me unconditionally. But tolerates me with love and compassion. Again, it's not an impatient tolerance. Like, okay, I'm tolerating you, but I'm starting to get a little bit impatient with you. No, that's not Krishna. So in that way that he's tolerating us with so much patience and love and compassion, we are invited to extend that gift to others and remind them how they are being loved and waited for, supported by Krishna himself. And then in our fourth class, which was yesterday, we try to study amanina manadena, two virtues in one line, because basically the two virtues are indicating the same thing from a positive and from a negative perspective. What do's and don'ts. Don't seek for respect, offer respect. Many verses in the scripture say the same thing. Do this, don't do that. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. We need to cover all the angles possible. We may miss one of those. So again, we analyze toxic versions of these qualities. We address the healthy expressions of each of them. And how, again, to make them sustainable. We are to be selfless and not expect recognition. That doesn't mean that there's no need or place for healthy validation, for healthy approval, for healthy affection. We are talking more about depending on other people's opinion for me to build a sense of identity, so to say, things like that. No? Like when we are already something or someone, as we were saying the other day, there are different ways we can define ourselves according to what I do, to what I have, to what other things of me, what I think of me. Many times neither of them help. So how to think of us, how to reply to the question, who am I? Well, I'm the beloved of Krishna. That's a good way to begin. And on that foundation, I don't need to seek recognition, because I'm receiving already the most, I'm being recognized by the most important person. Krishna is seeing me. That's the meaning of darshan. Darshan doesn't mean so much to see, but to be seen. So that's a profound reflection. How I am being seen by Krishna now, through the eyes of unconditional love. And enter that space of being seen by Krishna, lovingly. When you enter there, there's no need for any type of recognition, position, all that dissolves naturally. And then we talked about manadana, respect, offering respect to all. And we quoted different verses from scripture about how even if some people are not basically doing anything to deserve any form of respect, on the foundational level, they have Krishna in their heart, so that's worthy of respect. Even if there's nothing else to respect, so to say, that's always there present to offer our obeisances to. Everyone is a temple of God, because God is in everyone's heart. So we're quoting this line from Srila Prabhupada, right? He will say, God is everywhere, and whatever he is his temple. Which basically means everywhere. There's no place where there is not no temple, literally. And we also concluded explaining the word respect. What's the meaning of respect? Do you remember? I won't tell this one myself. Respect. Yeah, looking again. Yeah. So look again. In Latin, res pesare. Re means again or new. Spesare means to look. Like spectacles, no? Comes from spect, respect. So respect means to look anew, no? To meet with someone. The respect that I can offer to you is to be willing to look at you with fresh eyes, not to bring my assumptions, my prejudices, my filters, and, oh yeah, Krishnananda, I know who he is. No? And I'm not giving him any chance of being something else. And I'm not giving me any chance of rediscovering my relationship with him. So respect means basically that, to be willing to rediscover each other constantly. And ultimately that respect morphs into love. Because ultimately we don't want to just respect people, like some diplomatic formal thing. We don't want just to respect Krishna. We want to love Krishna, and we want to love everything in connection to Krishna, which is everything. But we have to begin somewhere. So anyhow, that's what we saw so far, a brief recap. I hope I was concise enough. And again, this first three lines that we've gone through so far put in context this fourth line, Kirtaniya Sadahari. For someone who does all of this, for someone who embraces Trinada Pisunichi Natarora Pisheshunamani Namananena, then Kirtaniya Sadahari. You can sing the name of Hari with this heart, in other words, with this ethic, sing the name of Hari endlessly, or you will be able to do so. That's basically the idea. In other words, proportionately to how much you will be able to embrace these qualities, will be able to engage in kirtan proper. Kirtan proper. Because kirtan comes from kirti, right? Kirti means fame. So kirtan means to spread the fame of the object of my kirtan. But if I'm not humble, if I'm looking for recognition myself, all that gets in the way of spreading the glories of Krishna. Because I may be trying to spread my own glories. So then we see how one line, the first three lines, kind of put the last one in context. So Kirtaniya Sadahari. With this heart, first three lines, sing the name of Hari endlessly. Sada. Sada means endlessly, always. So let's share a few thoughts about this last line. This last line is kind of a, how do you say in English, like motto? Motto?
Motto.
Motto for us in our tradition. Kirtaniya Sada Hari, like statement of principle. Like this is what our life is about. A different lines, like we can say the same. The Srimad Bhagavatam, first verse, very last line, Satyam Param Dimahi. It's another way of saying Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Satyam Param Dimahi means let's meditate on the supreme truth. And how for us that meditation takes place? Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Who is the supreme truth? Satyam Param Hari. What's our Dimahi or our main meditation? Kirtaniya. That takes to, Kirtan also takes to other forms of Smarana. And which is the capacity, how much we can engage in that? Sada. Perpetually. We are not trying to do that as a means to a different goal. We're not trying, okay, I will do some kirtan now, but so I reach heaven, so to say, and then I put the mridanga out off and I take rest eternally. That's not the point. Kirtaniya Sada Hari, always, endlessly sing the name of Krishna. That's the result of chanting Hare Krishna. Someone asked Srila Prabhupada once, what's the result? There are two things that come to mind. One was, what's the result of chanting Hare Krishna? And he looked like very innocently, the result of chanting Hare Krishna is that you will be able to chant more Hare Krishna. No? Because he was like, what else you are looking for? Right? Everything is in the name. No? And I remember another moment when one person, remember we were in the 60s, 70s, hippies, probably with huge amounts of substances on top of him, and he will say, when I chant that mantra, I find this red light coming here in front of my eye. Like implying, okay, it seems I'm getting closer to the goal of the chanting of the mantra, which is, of course, to see red lights over and everywhere, right? And Prabhupada will very simply say, like, continue chanting, that very soon the light will disappear. So he reverted to the argument, right? The guy came like, the red light is the fruit. And Prabhupada is like, the red light is a red light. No? Continue chanting and a green light will appear. No? And you can move forward. So in this sense, the last line, Kirtaniya Sada Hari, is showing how we can engage ourselves in bhakti eternally.
No? So we can what?
That this last line is showing how we can engage in bhakti eternally. No, it's not again, I practice bhakti for some time and then I attain other goal separate from bhakti and I discard bhakti. Because in some practices, in some schools of Advaita Vedanta, for example, they resort to bhakti. Mm. Their goal is Brahman, merging in Brahman, but as part of their sadhana to merge into Brahman, they offer puja, do kirtan, arti. So externally you may think, well, we are in the same track all together. But they are conceiving bhakti as a means. And the closer they get to their goal, the means are discarded. Like in Karmakanda. You have Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda in the Vedas. Karmakanda means all these different activities, rituals to obtain some blessed holiday in the heavenly planets, right? So here on Earth, you will engage in... Do you need that we close the curtain? You're fine.
No,
sorry. Okay. So to reach heaven, in one sense, to reach heaven, you have to go through hell. And what do I mean by this? To reach heaven, according to Karmakanda, you have to go so many rituals. That's like hell. Now, engage in such a technical thing and do austerities, everything. You know, deprive yourself of certain things so you can then enjoy so much. So they are doing certain things, but they're doing those certain things. It's not their goal. This is only a means to obtain what I actually want. Right? So that's the criteria in Karmakanda. The means and the goal are not the same. In Jnanakanda, that's similar. Again, someone who wants to merge in Brahman, they may do art puja to Krishna, chant kirtan, but their goal of all that is merging in Brahman. The closer they are getting to that merging, they discard the bhakti as a means. Right? So, in our case, that's the opposite. We are practicing bhakti, and the closer we get to our goal, instead of diminishing or discarding the means itself becomes the goal. So bhakti is the means, and bhakti is the goal. We have sadhana bhakti, that's why Rupa Goswami says sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, but it's bhakti all the way through. It's bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam says bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, which means bhakti comes from bhakti and bhakti takes to bhakti. And that shows that bhakti is the supreme goal, because there is nothing else above it. Someone asks, but what's the goal of bhakti? And of course, if I were to say something else, that something else will be higher than bhakti. But since there's nothing higher than bhakti, the goal of bhakti must be bhakti. a most refined expression of it, and another more refined expression of it, but it has to be bhakti. You follow the idea? So that's why I always say it, if bhakti is the means and bhakti is the goal, you're already doing what you want to do forever, for eternity. You're already engaged in what you want to do forever, and there is reason to celebrate that. And that's kirtan, basically. Kirtan, one word to translate kirtan is celebration. Of course, it's congregational chanting and so on, but it's done in the spirit of, in a celebratory spirit. So there are many lines in the scripture saying the same thing. Kirtaniya sadahari. No? In the Bhagavad Gita we have, I don't know, ninth chapter, satatam kirtayantumam. Always engaging, it's basically the same, always engaging in kirtan. Or when Krishna describes sadhu sangha in the chatur shloki of the Bhagavad Gita, no? Katayantas shaman mityam. Nityam, eternally engaging in harikata. And harikata is another form of kirtan. Right? Sukadev Goswami attained, is considered the acharya of kirtan, of the nine process. But his kirtan was speaking the Bhagavata. Right? The Bhagavatam says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Serving the Bhagavatas, again, nityam, perpetually. So my point with all this also is, better we establish a healthy relationship with the things, because we are expected to do them forever. Right? If I don't like that, and then someone comes and says, okay, by the way, you will be doing that for eternity. It's like, that sounds like eternal hell. If I'm not having a good time in kirtan. And kirtan, again, kirtan is not only singing, right? It's all this. Huh? Kirtan is not just kirtan, the word. Kirtan is sudhichina, sagishuna, manina, manadina, whole lifestyle that makes our life chanting. As we said the other day, in the beginning we have our life and our practice. So I have my life, my work, my relationship, my stuff, and then I have my japa, my kirtan, my whatever. But the more we progress, the two have to become one. My life is my chanting is my life. And no, that's how I like to think of this line of the Brahma Samhita. that says in Vrindavan, every word is a song. So they are doing kirtan by speaking. Right? That means their practice and their life became one. They speak and they are doing kirtan. You won't see the gopis chanting japa. In one sense, they don't need to, because whatever they are saying or doing is kirtan. Every step is a dance. No? That's the perfect, the ultimate synthesis of practice and lifestyle. It all became one. Every word a song, every step a dance. So again, in a general way, this last line is speaking about how we can engage in bhakti forever. In a more specific sense, this line speaks about nishta. Remember, this third verse is about nishta, which means stability in bhakti. And again, stability, nishta doesn't mean just stability in quantity. Like, okay, I'm able to keep my 16 rounds per day or to keep whatever. That's fine. But also a constant, as we say, presence and attention. And that's not only during the moment of kirtan, but during our relationships as well. Because our relationship is our practice also. We need to somehow integrate all these things. Like to have good relationship with other Vaishnavas is part of my service to Sri Guru, for example. A big service to the Guru is your relationships. But sometimes we don't think in those terms. We think just my service to the Guru is whatever, giving a donation or opening a temple or doing something, but we do not think of seva in terms of how we relate to one another. So that's a very important point. So this verse, these principles of this verse speak about how to relate with everything properly. And that's kirtan. Again, kirtan is not chanting. As we say, kirtan means chanting the name of Krishna. Okay, let me make this case. Kirtan means chanting the name of Krishna. Okay. Krishna and his name is not different. They're not different from each other. So chanting the name of Krishna means basically developing my relationship with Krishna. Do you agree so far? Okay. But when we say Krishna, what does mean Krishna? Krishna is just an isolated person and everything else exists separate from Krishna? No. Krishna means Krishna plus everything that exists in connection to Krishna. And that's everything. So chanting means developing my relationship with Krishna, and developing my relationship with Krishna includes everyone else. So chanting the name of Krishna, kirtan, means developing my relationship with everything and everyone in the broadest possible sense. And so we need to get accustomed to define things in their broadest possible definition, not resort to the smallest possible one, on the contrary, right? So the whole Shikshastaka is about the name of Krishna, about this developing our relation. The whole it begins Param Bijati Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, and then starts to speak about symptoms of the name, effects of the name, and what happens when you chant the name properly. So let's go for a minute to verse 1 to go, and we will go back to this last line of verse 3. So the last line of verse 1 is, I just said it. That's another motto, if you will. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. Supreme victory to Sri Krishna Sankirtan, basically. Param Vijayate. Vijayate means victory. Supreme victory to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. So the word Sankirtan, here we have the word Kirtan. Verse 1, we have the word Sankirtan. In one sense, they are pointing to the same thing. But let's concentrate for a minute on Sankirtan. So we understand what's this last line about. So Sankirtan sometimes is translated as congregational chanting of the names of Krishna, or congregational praise, because it can be the chanting of his qualities also. Nam Sankirtan will be the congregational chanting of the name. It can be Guna, Rupa, Sankirtan, Lila, Sankirtan. But something that I, going back to this verse, Sankirtan implies relating to each other. Because it's congregational. Congregation is Sankirtan is, I need all of you to engage in Sankirtan. Because it's congregational. We need each other to do Sankirtan. We do not exist in isolation. If I pick cartels by myself and I run to that room, I'll say, I will do Sankirtan by myself. No. You can do Sankirtan. Sankirtan. No. But Sankirtan, we need each other for that. And we don't need each other only in number, but in quality of presence, in relationship. No, that's and again, this verse is trying to speak about that. So Sankirtan entails mutual support. It's not just let's speak in number, let's get a number so we can do Sankirtan. Where is our heart? If we are all at odds with one another, and I put you by force in a room and say, do Sankirtan. I don't know what will come out of that. No? First we may need to put the mridanga aside, bring this verse to the table, and have some deep conversation, so we can learn to get along, and then we can do Sankirtan proper. Because Sankirtan entails mutual support. We are all in this together. We need each other to do real Sankirtan. No, that's another way of defining sadhu sangha, as we were talking the other day. Once someone asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj, what's sadhu sangha? No? How to define sadhu sangha? Of course, we can say so many things. And he will say something very interesting. He says sadhu sangha, and he quoted Napoleon to define sadhu sangha. So he said, once Napoleon was with his army in a war, and one night they didn't have a place to spend the night. And it was snowing. So they had to sleep open air. But they couldn't sleep because it was so cold and it was snowing. The risk was whomever falls asleep dies. So the soldiers were like coming to their commander-in-chief, Napoleon, so to see and asking like what to do now. So he thought for a moment and he put all of them standing in a circle. And now he said to one, now you sit like a chair. Like if you were a chair, there were no chairs, you become a chair for the person in front of you. The person in front of you will sit on top of you and the person behind you will be a chair for you. So everyone sit like a chair simultaneously. We can try after the class. It may take a few attempts, but we can try. One, two, we have to do it all at the same time, right? One, two, three. Probably they tried a few times. It's part of the deal. We have to sometimes fail, trial and error. But at the end, they were all sitting. They all had a place to sit, rest, where each of them were given support and receiving support simultaneously. So let's see, I say, that's sadhu sangha. So that's a very substantial, genius-like definition of sadhu sangha in the context of what we are talking here. Sankirtan. Sankirtan. We get to get offering support to each other. Offering and receiving. Giving and receiving. Dadati, prati, grinati. Srupa Goswami always says. All the symptoms of love he mentions, the six ones in the fourth verse of the Passion, are all giving, but also receiving. Giving gifts, receiving gifts. Giving prasad, receiving prasad. Giving your heart, receiving someone else's heart. It's never one side street, one way street. It's always reciprocal. So, again, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. In fact, the word San in Sankirtan, what it means the word Sam? There are different meanings for that. One of them can be Sangha. Sangha Kirtan. It's Kirtan in Sangha, in Sadhu Sangha. And what Sadhu Sangha? You have to ask Napoleon about that. So that's a point of making. No? We want to do Sankirtan. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna. If we want this Sankirtan to be supremely victorious, well, there are some things to follow for that to happen. Sadhu Sangha in place. Sangha Kirtan. Samyak Kirtan. That's another way of understanding Sam Kirtan. Samyak means complete. And again, complete doesn't mean we got the 15 guys we needed, we got the mridanga player, we got the harmonium. It's complete. You know, the number is there. No, quality. No, quality, completing quality. Sangha, okay, the number of the people are there, but samyak, completeness in quality. What's the quality? Sunichina, Sahishnuna, Amanina, Amanadina. These verses are describing the quality of the relationships. Mm-hmm. That allows kirtan to become samkirtan, samyak, complete kirtan, full glorification. Because again, if I'm mistreating all of you, and then we get together and do samkirtan, how complete is that praise of Krishna? Remember, Krishna, what is saying as Kapila? If you worship me in the deity and mistreat each other, that worship goes nowhere. No? So doing sankirtan is a form of worship. It's a form of yajna. So if our worship of Krishna through the name, kirtan means praising Krishna, but there is no proper connection. You follow my point? So this verse is kind of the formula for sankirtan to be actual sankirtan, to be actual praise, to please Krishna. And it's all about relationships. And that's why also samkirtan, the sam, can be connected with sambandha. Sambandha kirtan. Sambandha means relationship. So samkirtan is kirtan with relationship. With proper relationship. Again, it's not just a number of people in one single room. There's relationship. At least work on progress, but there's relationship. There's an awareness of how we can grow into this Sunichina, Sahishnuna, Manina, Manadena. Sambandha kirtan. That makes the whole kirtan, sankirtan. Sangha, association, yes. Samyak, complete in quality. And what's that? Sambandha. No, proper relationship following this third verse of Sikshastra. So I'm saying all this in relation to sankirtan, because here it says only kirtan, but it's speaking about sankirtan. No? It says the meter of the verse doesn't allow to put sankirtan, but it has already been said before sankirtan. So now we are talking about that here. And that's how we can participate in Gaur Lila, actually. Gaur Lila is still going on. The grace of Mahaprabhu, his associates, is descending to us through the parampara. So we are still given a chance of becoming an active member, participant of Gaur Lila, but engaging in, by engaging in sankirtan from the proper place. The Bhagavad Gita, as you may know, the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja, and so on. Abandon all sense of dharma and surrender to me. That's the conclusion of the Gita. That's the beginning of the Bhagavatam. We Gaudiya Vaishnavas will read the Bhagavad Gita in a way that the Bhagavatam becomes the natural sequel to the Gita. So the Gita ends there, sarva dharmam parityaja. The Bhagavatam starts at that point. Dharma pravito kaitavo. It's basically the same thing. No? Rejecting all forms of dharma that are cheating in nature, that do not conclude in prem. No? Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will explain that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. What do we mean by kaitav dharma or cheating religion? He will say dharma artha kama moksha. No? That's strong. No? To say moksha is cheating? Wow! No? All the things that for most people are the goals of life. No? Of course, we are not condemning that. We are just saying in comparison to prem. So where the Gita ends, Bhagavatam begins. And where the Bhagavatam ends, Gaur Lila begins. Where does the Srimad Bhagavatam ends? What's the very last verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Namasan kirtanam jasya. Sarva papa pranasanam pranamoduka samanas tannamami harimpanam. So the last verse, the first line of the last verse of the Bhagavatam, nama sankirtanam yasya, ends glorifying the sankirtan Krishna. It leaves us at the feet of Mahaprabhu. So it's important that we see this natural unfolding and sequence between our main books. Bhagavatam concludes, takes us to the feet of Gita concludes at the feet of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam reaches its high point, leaves us at the feet of Gaur Lila, Mahaprabhu, Sankirtan. And here we are, all of you, as a byproduct of Gaur Lila. We are the consequence of Mahaprabhu's grace. No? If it will not be for that, I wouldn't be here in New Zealand talking with all of you. Who knows where I will be? Better not to entertain possibility. So we are all here put together by such a current of grace. So again, how to actually participate in this Gaur Lila that we are already part of? How to really be active contributors and participants? Okay, Gaur Lila is all about Sankirtan. But Sankirtan is all about this. Right? So the more we can embrace this, the more we are living in Gaur Lila. And we will have the type of vision that someday in our lives, and Narottam Das Thakur will have singing Sankirtan and Mahaprabhu and Panchatat and all the associate manifesting Kirtan to tell them, we have not gone anywhere, here we are. We just were waiting for you to embrace this verse, so to say. Once we live our life from this way, again, grass starts to talk, trees starts to instruct, Mahaprabhu and his associates start to appear. And we are like, okay, Gaur Lila didn't go anywhere. It's here we are. So this verse is revealing the key for our substantial participation in Gaur Lila. And Gaur Lila is the entry door for Krishna Lila also. And that's another topic of conversation. We need another visit for that. No? Because Gaur Lila is not only the entry door for Krishna Lila, but the deeper you go in Gaur Lila, you find yourself in Krishna Lila. And the deeper you go in Krishna Lila, you emerge again in Gaur Lila. Don't think that Gaur Lila is only a bridge to Krishna Lila. The higher and deeper you go in Krishna Lila, Gaur Lila appears as a manifestation of that. I will leave it just at that. Yeah, it's a dangerous journey of no return. And I'm flying tomorrow, so I have to. We can continue some other day. So, when all the things are into place, we can really say then Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana with real meaning, with real realization. May that unique chanting, that Sankirtan, that quality of chanting, which again also means how to relate to everyone, Sambandha Kirtan, be supremely victorious. Supremely victorious over what? Over all the things that get in the way of that. When we say Kijai, Gurudev Kijai, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Kijai means all victory to Prabhupada. Victory over whom? Over all the stuff that is still inside of me, that gets in the way of me understanding and serving and loving that particular person. We are saying Kijai. We are not saying Kijai like, go outside and defeat all the demons over there. Why going over there if I can go over here? So in this way, this verse is so important. And again, the whole Sikshastakam, as we say, the first verse of Sikshastakam is talking about the glories of the name. Second verse still talking about the glories of the name. The last line of the second verse, Mahaprabhu say, what gets in the way of that? I'm so unfortunate. I'm not feeling this. And then the third verse comes to give us the solution, the medicine, to how we can chant and how we can live our life in a way that all the fruits of Sankirtan can come. And then verse 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 are just an elaboration on what happens when you chant by living your life through this ethic. All these ecstatic symptoms and different experiences. So there's a sequence in the Sikshastakam. That's a great contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, he didn't say, and of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami first. Rupa Goswami revealed, shared the verses with us. That's a great contribution. Then Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami put them in an order of 8. That's another contribution. Okay, there's an order here. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur revealed each verse is talking about the particular stage of bhakti. So we can see there is a sequence that needs to be honored. And I will say, if we are all sincere and pay attention, probably the When we go beyond this verse, we start to recite verse 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The more we go on verses, probably the more we feel, I'm not there. No. In separation of Krishna, one moment feels like 12 years. I mean, beautiful, but it feels a little bit like, okay, on my way there in a few lifetimes, right? So we can see that there is a gradual sequence of unfolding. Mm-hmm. So we cannot skip steps. So as we say, for most of us, this third verse is not necessarily where we are now, but where we are invited to be. No? A short-term goal. And short-term goal, I'm not saying short-term in the sense of next weekend, next year, but this lifetime. No? Maybe next lifetime we go other more advanced stages of sadhana and so on. Again, there is no rush. Once someone asked Lasidhar Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, if I start practicing bhakti in this lifetime, from zero in this lifetime, how much time does it take to reach perfection? He was kind of like how many lifetimes? Trying to make the calculation. And Srila Sivana said, how much you can say a number, right? But the question is even why you care for that, right, to begin with. Because if you are just satisfied doing bhakti, to one person he said that. Why you are so concerned about that if the process is so nice? So where do you want to go? If you want to go somewhere else, that means you are not properly embracing the process here and now. And that speaks about where you are going. But to this person, you say, well, three lifetimes. No? If you are practicing seriously. And the devotee was like shocked, feeling three lifetimes is too much. Mm-hmm. And when Srila Sivana saw his shock, he became shocked. Is it too much, three lifetimes? After endless births and deaths, doing anything and three lifetimes, you can attain the highest of the high. Is it too much, three lifetimes? So. But again, we have to honor the sequence. So short-term goal, third verse of Shikshastaka, nishtha. Mm-hmm. Steadiness, internal culture, deep culture of these qualities in our relationships and that overflowing to our practice. So anyhow, because of this and many other things, as we say, this third verse, in my opinion, and in the opinion of basically almost everyone that I talk to, is especially for us in our stage is the most important thing Mahaprabhu ever said. Mm-hmm. His golden rule, not to chant the name only again, but to live our whole life as an extension of the chanting. Mm-hmm. The two are again inextricably united. My life has to be an extension of my chanting, and my chanting becomes an extension of my life. How I live my life will affect how I chant when I sit for chanting. How I sit for chanting also will affect how I live my life. So at one point my life has to become chanting itself, as I say. Every song, every word is sung. Your life became chanting. There's no life and chanting. My life, my practice of chanting. One. No. It's not like, oh, my life, well, sometimes I dance in kirtan. Every step is a dance. Says Brahma Samhita. Life and practice became one. Right? So this beautiful line from Brahma Samhita reveals how much actually can our practice and life become one. Vrindavan is that place where every word is a song and every step is a dance. It's not that in Vrindavan they say, okay, now let's dance. Right? Okay, let's sing now. It's already happening. That became their life, right? Before concluding, we have finished almost all of our lectures, at least the ones that we analyze this, invoking the principle of unconditional love. How this idea that Krishna has love for us, unconditional love, unconditional acceptance can be so foundational for embracing Sunichina, Sahishunama, Ninama, Nadana. So a few words to conclude in connection to how this principle of unconditional love applies to Kirtaniya Sadahari. So again, I'd like to read a few excerpts of something I'm writing for a forthcoming book on Krishna's unconditional love, or irreversible grace, as I like to call it. So it says like this. With the awareness of Krishna's unconditional love, we are naturally compelled to express humility, forgiveness, unpretentiousness, and honor. All these four qualities. qualities that flow from living as God's beloved. And as a result, we are irresistibly drawn to live a life of celebration, singing, dancing, and praising God's irreversible grace, all while sharing this blessedness by making others aware of this divine miracle. So, again, if I'm aware of Krishna's unconditional love, naturally I become inspired in the most substantial way to be humble, tolerant, respectful, compassionate, because so much is coming already, so much I am receiving. And I want to celebrate all that. So I live a life of celebration. Kirtan is basically that, a lifestyle of celebration. And when we really live that, naturally that starts to fill ourselves to the point that it starts to overflow in us and sprinkle other people. That's what I like to call prachar, or sometimes called preaching. For me, preaching is not so much, okay, there comes a guy, let's try to convince him about what we are doing. No, probably you just have to be yourself. And that has to be, you have to live your life in such a compelling way that whomever witnesses that is like, wow, what's that? what do you have inside? That you're living your life in such an attractive way. There's this line that is attributed to Saint Francis that he says, always preach the gospel, and whenever it's necessary, use words. Like implying most of your preaching is not speaking, it's just walking your talk. That's how Mahaprabhu converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the highest pandit of the planet. not an easy one to convert, right? Okay, I'll have a tomorrow I'm having a debate with the topmost pandit of planet Earth. Oof, we'll be praying for you. Good luck. No, are you already putting your notes together, your arguments, whatever? What will you say? Mahaprabhu just sat in silence for a week. And that converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. At the end, he said a few things like checkmate. But at the point, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was already ready for conversion. Why? Because Mahaprabhu didn't say anything, but his example, his presence, what was exuding from his presence, was talking by itself. So he didn't need to say anything. His achar was the prachar. Right? Interestingly, the word prachar includes the word achar. Achar means behavior, conduct, and pra in Sanskrit means a very special type of. So prachar, which many times we translate as preaching, means a very special type of behavior. That's pointing to what's the essence of prachar. The preaching is just give an example. Live your ideals, basically. Right? So that naturally becomes like contagious, epidemic. So that's kirtan, ultimately, a celebration of the gift we have received. So two more paragraphs to read. I went a little bit lost and found on the way. Without this coherent lifestyle, this third verse, depicted in this third verse of Shikshastakam, chanting the names of God risks becoming a hollow repetition of words rather than a genuine connection with the divine. True chanting arises from a life lived in alignment with the principles it reflects, turning our practice into a living extension of our relationship with Krishna and all that exists. So again, indirectly this verse is trying to tell us if we don't practice our chanting and our lifestyle according to these to proper relationships, chanting can just become a catatonic repetition of words. And that can even numb our consciousness instead of awakening it. Right? So instead of, if we do not engage in Sankirtan or Japa or Kirtan from the right place with the right principles, our repetition, instead of creating aliveness, is creating numbness. Instead of creating Krishna consciousness, it's creating Krishna unconsciousness. Sorry to use some strong words, but that's it. But someone will say, but Maharaj, but that's the name of Krishna. No, that's not the name of Krishna. If this is not chanted following this, as it's proportionate. As much as we chant the name following this, that's the name of Krishna. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say the name of Krishna are not the letters, the external sounds. It has to do with Atasri Krishna Namadi Nababhagrahyam Indriyai Sivonmukehi Jivado Swayameva Shvaradhyana. The tongue and the material senses cannot contact the name of Krishna. It only manifests when we have the proper attitude. That's how it works, when he's pleased with our attitude. So this is important, because if we just repeat the name without proper attitude, that's not the name. That's some sound. K, R, A, I, S, H, N, A. But no matter how you try to squish all those letters together, that doesn't amount to Krishna Naam. There has to be a certain quality of attitude. So if you are not chanting with the right attitude, I will say, and we are not doing anything to improve that, the more we do it wrongly, the worse. You follow my point? Someone, to give an extreme example, if someone is chanting japa and simultaneously watching Netflix at the same time, and that became a habit. So that's my japa in front of the screen. The more I do that, the worse. The more I'm perpetrating a toxic habit. It's not like, no, but now I'm chanting 64 rounds, 1 lakh, and I can watch 8 hours of Netflix. Right? That's not the name of Krishna. So again, this verse is also bringing us back to, or even if you're telling, no, Maharaj, I'm not chanting while watching Netflix, I'm chanting without doing anything. Yeah, but still, how much this is playing out, this third verse in your life, in your relationships. Last paragraph from regarding unconditional love. This seamless connection between chanting God's names and embodying a lifestyle aligned with divine praise finds its perfect reflection in the chosen name for God in the fourth line of this verse. Right? Hari. So there's something to say about why this name here. So Hari means both lion and thief. Among other things, but these two first. Kirtaniya Sada Hari. A God of unconditional love is indeed both a lion and a thief. He is a lion roaring with fierce mercy and affection in the depths of our hearts, calling us to live as his beloved. With that roaring, lion-like.
Calling us to what?
To live as his beloved.
As
God's beloved. He's calling us with that Mahaprabhu. Some names of Mahaprabhu is Gaur Simha also. There are some names that literally say Simha. If you didn't get with Hari, okay, there are a few names that Krishna is like Simha. There are some verses, beautiful verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita on him as Simha, as a lion, roaring, and many other qualities. He's golden like a lion, fine waist like a lion, broad chest like a lion, and roaring loudly like a lion. So he's a lion in every sense. He's the ultimate Narasimha. He's Narasimhadev personified. He's not different from Narasimhadev. Remember, he's the same person. So the golden lion. But also, however, Hari means also thief. So he's also a thief whose only desire is to capture our hearts with the irresistible sweetness of his grace, so that he can love us as fully as he has always longed to do. So Krishna is already loving us, but he knows that only when we choose to love him back, then their loving interaction will reach its fruition. So he's longing that we reciprocate. And when we are doing that, Krishna, in his humility, will feel, oh, you have done me such a favor. Thank you so much. That's how Krishna speaks to Gopakumar in Briha Bhagavatamrita. That's how he speaks to Gopakumar. And I want to read those. I was not planning, but I want and I must read those verses to you, because those are very powerful. Moving. Let me see. Okay, here we are. Fasten your seatbelts, because this is powerful. So Gopakumar, again, Gopakumar arrives to Golok Vrindavan, no? You know Briha Bhagavatamrita, the journey of Gopa Kumar, he's going through so many places and meeting different devotees. Lots of things to say about that. He's appreciating all the devotees, all the forms of devotion. He's not being sectarian. He's not saying, my Krishna Vrindavan is the highest stuff. He's he's having interfaith dialogue all throughout his way to Golok, basically. And eventually he arrives to Golok Vrindavan, to his goal. And he meets with Krishna, both embrace and both faint. Boom. No. And everyone in Vrindavan is like, who is this person that just came and made our Gopal faint? No. And Krishna then returns, but Gopakumar still remains like unconscious. So now comes the words that Krishna pronounces to Gopakumar, who just arrived to the spiritual world, overflowing with mercy. I won't go into the commentaries of the verse because it's too much. I just go to the verse. So Krishna says to Gopakumar, welcome, welcome, my dear child. I am fortunate, Krishna is saying, most fortunate to meet you here. For so long, I have been eager to see you. Of course, he's saying this to each one of you. So you can take this personal. My dear friend and darling, you have passed many lifetimes without a glance in my direction. Yet, I was always there, a fool dancing with hope, thinking, dancing with hope.
Fool.
Yeah. Thinking, perhaps in this lifetime, or this, he will finally turn his face toward me. But I could not find the slightest excuse to bring you to my abode. Oh, brother, while still honoring the eternal laws I myself have created. From this, I realized the absence of mercy on my part and became agitated. Krishna saying, what to do? Anxious as to how I could obtain your mercy, this God talking to the devotee, I transgressed my eternal code of conduct and arranged for you to take your current birth in the sacred district of Govardhan, my most beloved abode. And I, my dear child, became your guru, known by the name Jayanta. Today, finally, last line, Krishna is telling to Gopakumar, today, the day that he arrived to Golok Vrindavan, today you have fulfilled the longing I have held in my heart for so long. Please, nourish your happiness and mine by staying here forever. Okay? So that's the God we worship, just in case, right? It's a God of mercy and a God that's so humble that even though we live life after life without even caring for his existence, once we turn our sight to him by his grace, in great big part, he feels indebted to, oh, you are fulfilling my desire. What can I do for you? Right. So in that sense, also Krishna is a thief. He's very expert in capturing our hearts. There's, just to conclude this nice story, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will tell of two policemen in India. So these two policemen were in India and they were Krishna Bhaktas. But they were policemen. But Krishna is known as a thief, right? Hari. So they were like contemplating. One of them came to the other and said, do you know what? They have been thinking about this. No? Like, we worship, our God is a thief. And we are policemen. Right? So we are supposed to stop thievery. But we worship someone who is a thief. So it's not that contradictory. It's not a problem. Maybe. And the other policemen say, no, it's not a problem. Because in which sense it's not a problem? Say, because a thief, a good thief, will reach its, how do you say, what he wants to,
treasure.
Yeah, his treasure, whatever, no matter the obstacles that may be on the way. A real good thief, no matter if you put high walls, locked doors, passwords in between, he will be able to reach that. And those high walls and locked doors are the ones that we have erected around our heart. So our hope is that Krishna is a thief, a very good one. He will be very expertly go through all that and take his treasure, which is our heart. So no, it's not a problem that our God is a thief. We can continue worshiping him and remaining policemen, right? So that same thief now is appearing as Gaur Hari, Sriman Mahaprabhu, the author of Sikshastakam, the author of this third verse, and he's known as Gaur Hari, right? The golden lion, the golden thief. And he's none different from his name, right? Krishna, his name, and none different. So whatever the names represent, they are that. They are embodying all this lioness and thievness, thievery in the transcendental sense of the term. So basically, that, no? The golden Lord is giving us this golden rule to bless us with this golden opportunity to live our lives according to the principles described in this third verse of Sikshastakam, all of which we have tried to explore together this last week. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to have this journey, exploration together. I hope it was we survived the exploration. Here we are still, hopefully with a few extra gifts of mercy and realization in connection to this verse, and hopefully we can held this important golden rule in a very special part of our heart and continue to unfold its meaning inside of us. No, it's an ongoing conversation. It's not, okay, the class are gone, the third verse is gone, my life continues. No, no, how we can continue living into this verse. And Kirtaniya Sadahari, endlessly, eternally engaging in this divine praise. So thank you so much. And before concluding, I don't know if any of you have any questions or anything. And before I have the homework also, and this is a more challenging homework for you, which is you have to walk the talk of this verse for the rest of your life. as much as you can. But that's the obvious homework. I wouldn't even need to say that. The homework is like try to take all that we have shared this week as much as we can. Make it an experience, make it a lifestyle. As we are expected to do Kirtaniya Sada Hari, always do Kirtan, we are also expected to do Sada, eternally engaged in the first three lines of the verse also, right? Because that's the only way we can do real Kirtan. So, yeah. Mahaprabhu is giving us homework for eternity, basically. That's his grace and mercy. So, before concluding, some questions, something you would like to share?
One comment, Maharaj.
Yes. Yes.
You spoke about how, in order to chant, really chant properly, we need to have proper, good, healthy relationships with the other devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And on one level, I've known that. I thought I knew that. But you're talking about it really hit me. That I understand now it's essential for me to relate with other devotees in a healthy way, however they relate with me. And so that's, yeah, that really hit me, that's a requirement to carry this out. And it's the application of this.
Yeah.
And to Kirtaniya Sadahi, Sadahari for me requires that.
Yeah, because of course, like this verse in the Bhagavatam, Sadabho Hridayam Mahyam Sadunam Hridayam Toham. Bhagavan is saying, I am the heart of my devotees are my heart. So, again, I cannot address Krishna and mistreat his heart in the form of his devotees, right? How much you can separate Krishna and his heart? You cannot, so. Vaishnavas are an extension of God's mercy and presence in our lives. So. And I will argue again, this verse is not limited to how we relate to the Vaishnavas, but we relate with everyone. Because we could make the case that everyone is a Vaishnava in potential. Even if they behave in a total a-Vaishnava way now, non-Vaishnava way, in potential, the highest potential of the jiva is in bhakti, in divine loves. And as we say, Krishna is seeing all of us according to our brightest potential. So our bright, in the eyes of Krishna, everyone is a devotee in that sense. Mm-hmm. Everyone is potentially a lover of God. So we can see in that, from that lens, we can see everyone is a Vaishnava. Some of them are actualized, have actualized their potential. Some of them are absolutely oblivious to their potential, but in potential they remain Vaishnavas. So I have to honor that potential Vaishnavism, potential love of God, for love of God that everyone has. So just to make that clear, and we are not just careful to be nice with the devotees and then everyone else is a non-devotee and a karmi and a demon, and we draw that type of line, and how much we are still not a karmi and a demon and all that stuff ourselves, as we were talking the other day. Impersonalism, functional atheism, and all that stuff. So, Bhadra, you raised your hand.
Just a thought came in support of what you just said, Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading just yesterday in a little booklet called Vaishnavism, Real and Apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember whether it's by Saraswati
Thakur or
Saraswati
Thakur. Saraswati Thakur.
And he was saying that every jiva actually is a Vaishnava.
Mm-hmm.
But we have turned away from our nature.
Mm.
So, yeah, I just thought of that.
Okay. Thank you. Oops. Thank you. Something else? Any other comments, thoughts, questions, whatever you may like to share? Trivikram Prabhu?
I was just thinking, obviously, we're all works in progress, and it's all on the same lines. We're works in progress, and I guess the spirit of that verse to me speaks that actually we hold space for one another in that journey to try and improve, not that we use the verse as a way to, as a lens to judge other people and say, they're not Vaishnavas, therefore I won't engage in their kirtan. You know what I mean? Thinking that's
good point.
That's the spirit of the verse that actually.
Mm-hmm.
We all support each other on our journey, and that's the social implicit social responsibility we have if we are Vaishnavas to endure the journey together and uplift each other and
thank you. That was kind of a very nice for me definition of Sadhu Sangha also, so many we can give that you gave. Hold space for each other in our journey, in our shared journey. No? That's one of many ways we can ask, so what's Sadhu Sangha, right? To hold space for each other in our shared journey. And each one needs their own space at their own time in their own way. But we want to be there to hold that space and to be held in that space. Again, like the example of the chair itself. And it's all part of the journey. Yeah. Thank you. Smoking?
No, I can't remember the line. I guess when you were talking about difficulties or what the great souls might go through, was it Tarupi Sunishina? Is that toleration? Toleration. You were talking about toleration.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the second line? And as you were talking, I was sort of running through my mind of all the great personalities from our tradition and other traditions that have actually suffered.
Mm-hmm.
In the name of, well, not in the name of, but even though they have been actually great souls and they are accepted and acknowledged by so many people as being God-like people, godly people. And then when you were speaking, I was thinking that that's kind of, in our little world, that's a reality we can face quite often, is that we will be, you know, you have a concept of spiritual life, you know, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And there are so many wonderful, beautiful things about being with devotees and having prasadam and having kirtans and festivals and deities and going to the holy dham. There's so many very beautiful, heartwarming, uplifting things, but there's always that reality of what we might refer to as the path of purification or life, which has maybe been in the mature world. There's awkward situations that come about. So I was just wondering how... I find that quite a difficult concept to embrace because for me, I just want to be happy. I've got an easy life. Just a gentle, lovely, easy life. But I know that, you know, and then there's that kind of like you get these, like, you know, even through your visit, if you're, as you've been speaking and you're so nicely been helping us to go deeper and sharing your experiences, and you know that you've got some, you know, painful times ahead. But at the same time, you're saying, obviously, we also do know Krishna loves us, but it seems that that is just the reality, isn't it? That, you know, you have to embrace the, you know, the pain as well. But
yeah.
And you may not feel totally like Krishna's love in that, but, it, yeah, I was just thinking, because it is like that, even when you think of the Mahabharata and, you know, Ram being exiled to the forest and, you know, so many, it's like, where does it even end, that where people are, you know, there's not intrigue and all this. So, yeah, I'm just trying to take strength and from what you've been saying and how to be a bit more brave. I'm not very brave.
Well, by saying that, you're already being brave, right? By saying, I'm not being brave, that's a sign of bravery, because one is being vulnerable and exposing one's difficulties. So that's a sign of courage in itself, right? So, I will say, I think we talked about a little bit about that and pain on our first Q&A, I think, here. That how, and I, again, I'm talking in general, I don't know the details of everyone's journey, but I can totally empathize if some of you come from a very painful, I don't know, childhood or traumatic past, and you are like, I need a break from suffering. But I think the ultimate reconciliation is not so much stop suffering, but learning to suffer. Because as we say, there is suffering in Golok Vrindavan. Krishna is in separation of Radha. He feels he's dying of separation. He's suffering. Again, it's not the same suffering we know. So for me, that's the important thing. It's not so much discard all forms of suffering, because we end up in Brahman or something if we are trying to do that. Right? Pay attention to the dynamics of the Lila in Vrindavan. There is suffering. Pay attention to the gopis, the Brajavas, how they feel when Krishna not only leaves Vrindavan, but leaves their sight, their eyesight for a moment. No? There's suffering. or the hearts of the saintly people in this world, when they witness the illusion of other people, they suffer. No? Do you think that Prabhupada was not suffering coming to the West and witnessing the condition of... He was suffering. He was the one who said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But he will suffer also. And it's not contradictory. Again, the happiness of chanting Hare Krishna also includes a form of what we may call paradoxical suffering. Because it's a suffering that is sweet. When you have love, and again, maybe because we don't have love, suffering is bitter and we don't want to suffer. But when you have love, even the suffering is expanding your heart. No? For example, compassion. Compassion is suffering. Compassion means I see you suffering and I suffer, right? I'm suffering, but in a way that I'm developing love, I'm expanding my heart. So there is a place for suffering in a way that expands our heart. And again, let me give you an example from here. Sometimes you are watching a movie and it's a movie which is a whole of, the Ramayana even, like Mahabharata, some of these stories that it's one tragedy after another. No, there's no break there, right? No, Dasar and Maras dies, and then to the forest, and then Sita kidnapped, and they return, and then she's exiled again. It's like, give her a break. But if you are listening to those narrations from some qualified sadhu, your heart is breaking. You're crying and crying. Right? Imagine the sadhu is here talking the Ramayana with full feeling, telling all this painful stories, and I'm watching on the side, and all of you are like, you know, crying. And I enter I storm into the scene and say, stop this narration, you are all crying. No, you're not happy. Let's cancel this Rama. You will look at me like one X-ray and wanting to kill me. No, it's like, Maharaj, leave this place right now. Let us cry, okay? I want to suffer. So to say, there's a sweetness in that suffering. No? I think Srila Sivananda said, in the ancient India, the sadhus, itinerant sadhus, visiting a village, okay, 1 week of Ramayana. So he's reciting, and all the village goes every week, every day of the week to hear Ramayana. Every night, all of them are crying, listening to Ramayana. Seventh day comes, narration is over, the sadhu leaves. All of them start to cry because they cannot continue crying. Because the sadhu left, there's no more Ramayana narration. So it's paradoxical, that's my point. It doesn't make sense on some level, so you need to reach another level where it makes sense. So I'm saying all this in terms of, again, we are not here about canceling or dismissing pain, because in the name of doing that, we can become emotionally repressed, dismissive, bypassive, evasive, escapist, not feeling what needs things that need to be felt, but then we learn to feel them from a new place. So there's, Srila Samarsh will quote one poet from Shelley, an English poet, that he will write one poet that speaks about the sweetness. There is sweetness in suffering. It's possible. Not all suffering is sweet. We can suffer miserably. That's what Prabhupada will say. Do not lament for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Indirectly, he's saying there is something that is worthy of lamentation. In other words, you can cry for certain things, and there's a sweetness in that. You know? So it's not about stopping to suffer, it's about learning to suffer. Because suffering is always teaching a lesson, and suffering is always opening the heart. Two things, Richard Rohr would say, two things open the heart like nothing. Great love, great pain. And I know all of us who have gone through any of those, we know in those moments, and we are right now in that present moment. No, our mind is not going shopping to the past, to the future. Great love, great pain comes. You are right here, right now. And everything is so much more real and alive than the usual normal days. So there is a purpose to all that. Yeah. And again, it's important. Sangha is important. No? Again, holding space for each other in our journey. And realizing over and over again, it's not only my pain. It's not only your pain. It's our pain. It's a collective sharing journey. We are all of us are suffering in one way or another. So we need to open our doors to each other's in our suffering. And many times, most communities get together and more tied around suffering than around joy, so to say. You can study human history. The communities that have become more cohesive revolve around a shared experience of suffering that make them closer to each other.
Yeah, we were recently on the Picton Ferry, and so the ferry is a boat that goes between the North Island and the South Island.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's had some really rough weather, so we were on this very rough sailing. And it was incredible because when we first got on, everybody's just doing their own thing and just, you know, the sailing's going on and da da. And then it got into really rough seas, like a, you know, really bad swell. And at that point, we all became one community. Some people were vomiting and scared. And it was just like incredible, like the sense we suddenly all were all connected. It was just a really kind of incredibly connecting time when through that. And then, so that was nice. And then when it went back into smooth sailing, but it went on for a long time. So it was quite an intense crossing. Then everybody, once again, it became smooth. Everybody else went back to their thing. And my sister-in-law was saying, because they flew at the same time as we crossed on the ferry and the warship, they flew. So it was a very bad flight. You know, that Nelson to Wellington flight can be quite bad sometimes. And she said she experienced exactly the same thing on the plane. It's like as soon as it became intense, everybody kind of was there.
Solidarity.
Yeah. And so you're not suddenly all these individual people. Uh-huh. Everybody was,
So that's a big teaching to how pain brings us together in one way, more than maybe any other thing. No, I was also told by some devotees in the US when this 9/11 thing happened, how after that, for such a shared experience of suffering, and how everyone, you will walk in the street and everyone was greeting each other, like you were on the car and everyone else with like shared likes, like saying, I'm with you in this one, we are together, we are one. No? But again, they needed some catastrophe like that to reach that point. Then again, things start to become normal and we're like in our own individualistic journey again. So, and sometimes we need suffering to be reminded of our unity, you know. Hopefully we can learn the lesson without having to suffer, but sometimes we are very expert at forgetting how things actually are, right? So,
yeah,
Okay, something else before we put discussion to rest. Krishnananda Prabhu.
I was just reflecting on your comments about the eternality of bhakti. And how you can never get to a point where I've now perfected bhakti.
Exactly.
What's next? It's forever.
Forever.
And I was also thinking how within that, in the Sangha of devotees, it's not like we're all going to think exactly the same way. There's always going to be these different visions or different ways of seeing any one particular topic. And I think what springs to mind is like the example of in Krishna Leela, how when Krishna closed his eyes when Putana came, and I remember reading how the different acharyas had their different visions. Mm-hmm. Some say he closed his eyes because he's having to kill a woman and he didn't want to see her. I think another acharya said, Krishna was a demon, he didn't want to see a demon. Another acharya said, I think from memory, he took some shelter in Putana because she had some glimmer of a motherly nature. Mm. I think, anyway, so what I'm conveying is within the context of bhakti and in the sangha of devotees, up into Leela, there's this kind of togetherness at the same time as having different visions.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine those acharyas that had those different understandings of why Krishna closed his eyes, that for all we know, they may be in the spiritual world still having those discussions. No, I think he closed his eyes. And you can imagine like it's a loving conversation.
Of course.
It's not like, not trying to get one up on the other. I know you're wrong, I'm right, and they argue and then storm out. So I was wondering if you just had some to elaborate on that togetherness but having different visions at the same time.
Yeah, well, basically, yeah, thank you. Very important point. And first of all, yes, what you mentioned first, there's no final point of perfection. If we conceive perfection, that's a dangerous word, perfection, just in case. Because many times perfection becomes like some particular goal or situation to attain, and once I attain it, what? It's over? That's it? So perfection is always two steps ahead. You can always become more perfect. Perfection is not like a fixed maximum. Krishna is becoming more and more beautiful at every moment. If you want to use more and more perfect. He's already perfect. But he becomes more and more perfect. So yeah, in one sense for me, that's an important point to make. Perfection is not a final point to attain. Even if you say, but the perfection is to become pure lover of Krishna, attain prema bhakti, enter Golok Vrindavan, however we may like to frame perfection. But once you get there, still you continue to develop your love for Krishna. So you become more perfect. And that has no end. No? So that's, I know it's difficult to think in terms of that, but that's the nature of eternity, of reality. And in connection to your question, I will say this togetherness and differences of opinion is there in the very name of our metaphysics, our philosophy, Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. No? Bheda Bheda means difference and non-difference. No? And that's a pattern to apply in every direction. It's not just about Krishna and his energies. Well, yes, because there's nothing else but Krishna and his energy. And so this principle of unity and diversity is there everywhere. So there's unity, as you say, togetherness in the Leela. All of them are serving a common center with common ideal. There are differences of opinion, as we were talking today with Atmananda Prabhu and Bhakti Marga. In the Leela, you went to the Leela as well. In the Leela, Yashoda puts Krishna to sleep at night. As she sings some lullaby, she starts to sing some narrations of Ram Leela, and other Das Avatars, all of these Leelas. And Krishna sometimes will say, I am that one. So it's like, come on, stop the nonsense and go to sleep. So she wants him to have a sound sleep the whole night, because in her mind is Krishna's so tired, he's always skinny for the Ike's mother, he's never eating enough, so he must eat more, he must rest more, he shouldn't play so much. Those boys are a little wild with him. Now, when she's seeing all these bruises in his body, in her Vatsalya Bhav, she thinks, oh, these boys are so rude with Krishna in playing. But many of these bruises are by the gopis in romantic interaction with Krishna. But Yashoda's Vatsalya lenses do not go in that direction. She cannot, her psychology is goes on in certain perimeter. So she wants Krishna to sleep because she feels he's bruised, he's not eating enough, he's so tired. May he have full night sleep. That's her opinion, her desire. And her thinking, again, these bruises come because of this. Now, the gopis do not want that. The gopis do not want Krishna to have a sound sleep. The gopis are waiting for Krishna to meet them for their nightly rendezvous, Rasa Lila. So there's a difference of opinion there, right? I want Krishna to sleep. I don't want Krishna to sleep. But that's not a conflict. Radha and Yashoda love each other. There's so many verses in the scripture about their mutual love. But they have the different perspectives. Or as I said, the gopis know, oh, these are bruises are by the love, coming from the love battle. Yashoda is thinking something else. Is one wrong and the other correct? No. Each one is correct because they are saying that through the filter of their subjective, pure love. So I appreciate the example you give. No, it's not that acharyas will sit and fight with one another about who has the right perspective on the lila, because lila is a multi-dimensional reality. So it's not that it has only one meaning, only one possibility. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I personally enjoy a lot exactly going through the different commentaries by our acharyas to one same verse and seeing many times how different those commentaries are. Many times they are the same commentaries, interestingly, sometimes very similar, but many times are like even in direction that will seem to be even contradictory in some things they are saying. On some level, but on some level there's no contradiction, there's just a particular flavor and particular perspective and a particular revelation and inspiration. So that for me shows how much we need to, what we were talking today earlier, we need to get along with each other here and now, because those things exist even in eternity. Differences of opinion in the lila. So if I cannot deal with my difference of opinion with you here, I will go crazy in the lila. It's too much. So we need to deal with our differences. But first, I will suggest first establish the unity. Then we go to the difference. Now, don't start with what makes us different. I may have a different opinion with you. Don't start the relationship, but through what makes us different. That's setting the wrong pattern. First, start establishing a strong foundation of what makes us equal, one, what we share in common. That's for me very important. Even among Vaishnavas, among any people, even someone is not a Vaishnava, we share so much in common. We are souls, we are humans, we are connected with the same God in the center and so many other things. We all suffer and so on. So we can lay such a strong foundation of commonality. Okay, now let's go to the differences. Once the foundation of unity is well established, and we may need to spend a good time in that first, the differences will become even an ornament. Not even a disturbance, not even a problem. It will become like, oh, you think like that. Well, I think like this. You have that perspective. But there's so much common foundation first, and the differences do not feel like a threat or like a personal attack or like a problem. But we even appreciate them. So
you could use that for interfaith dialogue.
Totally.
To first find the common ground.
Totally.
And then build up from there rather than building up your sectarian.
Yeah, that's how it works for me. My attempts of interfaith dialogue is let's focus on what we share in common. And there's so much in common. And then, yeah, naturally the differences start to sprout, but on the foundation of commonality. So when the common foundation is established, differences can be even celebrated. They will add to the conversation. They will nuance the whole. They will give a particular flavor. They are no longer a threat or a problem. But first, commonality, common foundation. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much to all for your time, for your presence, for your company throughout this week. It's been, again, a pleasure for me to come again to Kati Kati. Tauranga, Gauranga, getting closer. At some point, we will get the government to change that letter. happy to get to know new brothers and sisters on the journey and to continue knowing those that I thought I knew, but I continue to marvel at getting to know each other and looking forward to somehow continue the journey together in one way or another. So thank you for giving me the chance of coming and sharing with you and receiving so much from you as well. It's always 50%, 50%. It's not that the guy in the fancy seat is doing one-man show here. It's always reciprocal. So your presence, your question, your commentaries, your thoughts are absolutely important part of the equation. So thanks so much. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Shri Shikshastakam ki jai, third verse of Shikshastakam ki jai, Kiwi Yatra ki jai, Gaur Premanand Hari Om, Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha, Kripa Sindhu Vyascha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo.